Okay, we're continuing in our story of the Battle of Jericho. We're on the very last part. Just need a couple minutes to finish that, then we can start the next section. We're still not finished with Rav Dessler's piece. That one sheet that we had, we're on the very last paragraph and a half. That's on page 265. And the last point Rav Dessler is making is that the shofar that they used to blow on, and then the walls of Jericho sank into the ground, was an instrument of tshuva. And it's an instrument of tshuva to uproot the evil and the impurity from one's heart. And then one has the ability to defeat one's enemy. And we discussed how every enemy of the Jewish people, whether it's an external enemy or an internal enemy, has a certain unique aspect of impurity that is fighting against Kiddush, against holiness, which we explained last time. And when the Jews fight against such an enemy, the inner conflict is what requires us to uproot the evil from the world. And then, and only then, can the heart of the Jewish person be strong enough through the holiness that is within himself to overpower the impurity. And you can purify your heart totally from the evil, and then the Jew can overpower the enemy and uproot it from the world. So we're on page 265 there, and let's just pick it up from about the sixth line from the top of the page there. Kishabo Yisrael lichbosh es Jericho. So when the Jews went to destroy, to conquer Jericho, lakor bechina shel tumah zumayolam, to uproot these specific aspects of impurity from the world, it wasn't enough just to be aroused by the blowing of the shofar for 7 days. You also needed circling around the city. And what's the idea of hakafas? What's the idea of encircling? The getter hakafasu, the concept of making a circle around something, is hafrada misharish hatuma, is separating something from the or oneself, from the root of impurity, hasoveves mi bechutz, which surrounds the person, around the person. What do we mean? Because he says in the brackets, the tumah bechinas chitzonios. Because tumah, impurity, is a superficial aspect. It's an external aspect. The things that the Yetzer Hara wants us to do are not intrinsically good things, but they're superficial things that appear to be things that we want to do, that surround us, as it were, enticing us to sin or enticing us to think certain ways, etc., etc. But they're not really emistika things. They're not true things. So there are things that are, as it were, they circle around us. That's what tumah does. So therefore, what do we have to do? We have to separate ourselves from that tumah. You surround the tumah, you encircle it with holiness. Asher minatekes umafredes oso mishrasha, that it separates it from its root. Shosniv sekes chiyusa v'nitenes lispato, and then it loses its life force, and then it's possible for it to be nullified. That's the concept over there, to be able to surround Jericho. Well, the impurity of Jericho was surrounded by this holiness. It was bottled up, and then it was nullified. That's how it works. It's like surrounding it, literally surrounding it and nullifying it and getting rid of it. Then, when you can do that, then you can move on. L'chein, savua kohanim es aron yisricha zayin yomim. Therefore, the kohanim encircled Jericho 7 days. U'biyom ha-zayin savu zayin pomim. And the seventh day, it encircled it 7 times. Kinis kelel, as we mentioned before, shebechina zayin yishleimus ha-giluyim ha-ruchanim ha-maseh. 7 is the aspect of the perfection of spiritual revelation of the world. Those are the 7 lower spheros, starting from chesed, going all the way down to malchus. So there's anti-spirituality, which is taking those 7 midos and going in the wrong way. So therefore, each negative mida was attacked by the powerful positive mida. Al yideza hifridu lagamri esatumar aprati sahi mishar shatumar soveves. Therefore, the impurity, that you specific impurity of each day, was separated totally from its root of impurity that surrounded it. And after those encirclements, came out this calling out of the people, Lashlomas Ikare Hatum Lagamri, to totally finish off the impurity. And then, consequently, the city of Yericho was able to fall down. Because at that point, the foundations of Tumah were totally decimated. And therefore, they were able to, the walls came down, and that was the end of the Tumah. So again, it's hard concepts to understand on a simple level, obviously. But we have to always look at ourselves that there are things that are holding us back. Right? Those things that are holding us back from getting close to Kodesh Baruch Hu, these are the walls that are creating barriers, between us and Hashem. Those are barriers that existed before we came into the world. Those are barriers that we helped create as well. And as long as those barriers exist, you know, we can't break through those walls. Those are, as we said last time, artificial things. They're not the real thing. The desire to speak Lashon Hara that comes from Kina and Sina and all these things that we think are so real, that we think are so important, and we think they're important because they have certain holy roots that have been distorted. And therefore, when we finally expose those unholy roots for what they're all about, and how do you do that? By encircling them with holy, real expressions of true holiness of those seven attributes. And when we see what real holiness is, and we see that this holiness does not belong in this adulterated state and manifesting itself in a negative way. So at that point, we can expose what it really is, and then we shout out, so to speak, that we want to be rid of it. And we finally do get rid of it, and we expose it for the empty, hollow, shallowness in which it really is, then you see that the wall was really not such a powerful wall. And the wall comes down easily, just sinks right away from you. And those are the mechamas, these are the wars that we have to be able to fight all the time, just like the Jews had to fight to be able to deserve to live in Eretz Yisrael. They had to have that ability to fight those seven negative mitos. Therefore, v'roi lahayir, and it's good to point out over here, the last paragraph, kinesa lahem lahariya b'kol, it was forbidden for them to shout out, adapayim ha'azayin b'yom ha'azayin, until the seventh day, and the seventh encirclement on that seventh day. Why? Kirak achar bitulo ha'gomer shalchiyas atuma, only after a total nullification of the life force of the impurity. In other words, when this total exposing of the true nature of the evil, that it really has nothing to it. Only when that happens. How do you do that? Aidei nituka mishorasha, by uprooting it from its root. Ba'kavas ha'kedusha, by surrounding it with holiness. Hariyu me'otzem taras alev, they screamed out from the essential purity of their hearts. The essential purity of their hearts finally was able to make expression of itself. As we know that again, it's a kol, it's not words. The the whole idea of the shofar, the kol shofar, the voice of the shofar, not the words of the shofar. The mitzvah is a mitzvah of noise, of voice, not of words, because words are very limiting. Words don't totally express what's on the person's mind. As we say, words cannot express how I feel. The innermost essence of the person isn't from words. Words are communication that are reductionist in nature, as we've said many times. But rather the purest feeling that's expressed verbally from a person is the voice. And the voice in the shofar is one expression. And now it was the people themselves were like a shofar. And it's that natural, unconvoluted krechts, so to speak, that comes out of the Jew. That really represents the purest element from within the Jew. His expression of wanting to be close to Hashem is expressed mostly not with specific words, but as this, when that feeling of finally separating that evil from you once and for all, and appreciating the holiness that's inside of you, words cannot express the great feeling that the person has at that point in time. And if you haven't seen a person in years and you see them, you don't have much to say. You just cry and call out, and words aren't appropriate. So the same thing over here, when there's total purity of heart, there isn't the complications of the words that follow with it. So that comes out of the purity of the heart. That we know that when you get accustomed to certain things, it dulls your feelings, and then the things that you do don't influence you in a positive way. And we couldn't nullify the tum of Yericho if we left things just a regular habit. So therefore, therefore we have to use all our strength to uproot ourselves from the tumma that surrounds us. Tumas deos harachov. We have to use all our strength to separate ourselves from the impurity of the false ideas that are in the street. And what's the best advice for that? Is to surround ourselves with the holiness of the Torah through the learning of Torah. And with a pure, holy environment. That brings down the Timtum Halev. And then it's possible to break through the barriers that surround us that bring out this dulling of the heart, and only then can we break that up. So what he's saying in this last piece is obviously we live it in very superficial worlds, incredibly superficial worlds, and that's what I was mentioning yesterday morning in the Mishnah Berurah class, how superficial this world is, that for water you have to pay money for, and good money for it, you know. $2.50 for a little bottle of water at an airport. It's Amish. Crazy. Even not at an airport. Where good old-fashioned water is just as good. It's just as good. And as a matter of fact, it's better. It's fluoridated. Right? You don't have to lose your teeth by this new water. Right? But they can scare people. Oh, the tap water's gonna kill you. Walkerton's gonna happen all over. And if they take one little place, you know, this is for sure good. You know, who knows? Who knows? But to pay that kind of money for it, it's just crazy. It's all a superficial world, and superficial people buying it, right? That's why Evian water, right? Evian backwards is spelled naive, right? That's what it spells, because people are so naive. Whatever people tell you, you're gonna do, right? So it goes to such an extent that when you're buying, they now will sell you kosher grape juice. That's dietetic grape juice. Dietetic grape juice, right? And so it's good for you, right? They can put a big heart sign on the grape juice, approved by the Heart Federation. It's a great thing for you, right? You taste it. What is it? And oh, by the way, you pay more for that because it's dietetic. So why are you paying more for it? Because it's dietetic. When you taste it, you find out, because all they do is dilute it with more water. So the dietetic grape juice, which has less grape juice in it and just more water again, right? And there's no guarantee that that is unfiltered water. Who cares? Right? You're going to pay more money than for regular grape juice. It shows you what kind of superficial world we live in. It's mamish a totally, totally superficial world. That's just a sign. There's so much superficiality out there. And we live in that superficiality. We see it all day long, and it surrounds us. And that makes us into superficial people. It makes us into superficial people. The only way you can get around that is to totally remove yourself as much as possible. Now, it's not totally possible, but as much as possible. And that's why you can appreciate, you know, where you have certain enclaves in the world, like in Borough Park or Sanhedrin Morcheves, where, you know, you have to be able to separate yourself, even if you have to go out some of the day, but you have to have a world that you've created, it encircles you with Kedusha and Tahara. Where you have to see constantly, there's a yeshiva here, a base medrash here, there's people learning here, there's people learning there. You know, it's incredible. You go to the bris, my son took me to the Mir Yeshiva. I mean, you can't believe it. And the Mir Yeshiva is a little enclave in Yerushalayim, right? Doesn't take up, I don't know, a couple acres. Not much. A few buildings, right? But what is it? It's 5,000 Bachurim learning Torah day and night. 5,000. He took me to I don't know how many base medrashes. Each base medrash has 600, 700, 800 guys in one building. There's two base medrashes, one on top of the other. Just 500, 600, 700 guys each base medrash, and it's like three or four of those buildings right next to each other. It's incredible. It's incredible. And that's the kind of walls you need to create. Or at least in your shul, you need to create a wall. There's got to be walls. In your house, you have to create walls. You have to make those walls to encircle the tumah and to expose. And when you see what real kedusha is, when you see what real kedusha is, then you could see what real phony, anti kedusha, which is tumah, is. And then it's able, you're able to bring it down. And that's what Rav Des is saying. We have to be able to do that in our lives, to be able to bring those walls down. Yes, Mitch.
Well, you know, the example of the water is very interesting, because the other way to look at that is that, you know, our Gashmius has disrespected, you know, the world that Hashem created for us, to the point that he's now forcing us to buy water because he's destroying water for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
With our lifestyle, with our, you know, I mean, I
don't, yeah, think that's okay. That makes sense.
So much the other point, I think it's really that's a penalty for us for not treating what he created with respect.
That's also true. That's for sure true. But you see, you have to pay money for that which is natural.
Right.
You know, but the truth is, you really don't need to pay. You know, you shouldn't need to pay, and I'm telling you, I don't think the water is as bad as people say it is. But I hear what you're saying. You're destroying. In other words, you're saying the whole global concept of our natural world is being destroyed.
Right.
That's true. That's for sure true. That's for sure true. Yeah, Sam.
In reference to the encircling.
Yeah.
Is there a similarity to this to the fact that after a Shiva is ended, people have to go around?
There really isn't this concept of going around. I haven't really seen it's so well sourced. You go out of the house. You go out of the house through a different door. It's just because you go backwards, so that's why you make a circle. But it's not intentional. I don't really haven't seen it anywhere as a real source. You go out one door and you come back through another, so you think you encircled it around. It's not really. I haven't really heard of real sources for that. We don't circle a grave,
but
even a house.
Circle the house that the Shiva was
in. That I'm not. I mean, I know people do a lot of things, but I don't know how well sourced they are. And that's one of the idea is you go out of a house. You go back into the house through a different door than when you came in when you started the Shiva. So you're going to go out through the front door, but you're going to come in through another door. So it could cause you to make a circle when you do that, but that's not what the intent is. Okay, so Mamela, and that's the whole idea of Hoshana Rabbah, Simchas Torah, all these things. At the end of the tshuva process, you have to be able to bring down all the walls. All those walls have to fall down. And if all those walls fall down by the time that the high holiday period is concluded, then you've accomplished the goal that you're trying to accomplish. Okay. So it's interesting in a political understanding that, as in the past, 10 years or so, a little less than 10 years, maybe it is 10 years, that Yericho, you see, once that was captured through all the kedushas that were there, as we explained last week, Yericho was exceptional because it connected the holy people to the holy land and taught us the whole idea of that the settlement of Eretz Yisrael depends on Hashem and not our weapons. And Yericho had to be conquered first and other cities after that, and Shechem and Hebron. And then finally we came to Yerushalayim. And if you look on the map, it's almost like a triangle around Yerushalayim. You got Yericho and Shechem, you got Yericho, and you got Shechem, and you got Hebron, and you got Yerushalayim in there. So those things had to be conquered till ultimately Yerushalayim would be in our hands. So it's interesting how in recent years you see the state of Israel's retreat of the land itself. And what was the first city that they gave up? The first city they gave up was Yericho. They gave up Yericho. That was the first city. You remember that, right? You remember Yericho, that they gave it up. And then the city of Shechem, Nablus, right? And then Hebron, they want to give it all away, but they only could give away part of it, right? Right. So you know, even though they're not, you know, totally not in our control, we have some control, but it's clear that those cities, like, they represented a lot. Jericho isn't just, you know, to be noted for its gambling casino, if it's still there. I don't know if it's still there. But, you know, that's not what Jericho is. Jericho is a significant city that represents a lot, where you could smell the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. And, you know, God forbid, a country that gives away these very cities that are our rights for those, for the land of Eretz Yisrael, God forbid, Hashem should protect us from our own fellow Jews who are doing this to us. Okay, let's now in a couple minutes just begin a little running gun into the next chapter 7. And in chapter 7 we begin a new story. But the truth is, if you have a proper sefer, if you look in a sefer Torah, you'd know something very interesting that, as we said, all the psukim are divided up into little parshios where there's a little break in the Torah scroll. And if you had a proper Torah scroll, it would show you that the last pasuk in Perek Vav, pasuk Chav Zayin, and the first pasuk in Perek Zayin, pasuk Aleph, it's a couplet of two psukim, is its own parsha. If you look in the Navi scroll, at the end of pasuk Chav Vav, there's a break, then we start a new little mini parsha of two psukim, and then we move on to the next parsha. Now let's look at those two psukim, and we'll see something very interesting. In Pasuk Chav Zayin, which we read already, it says, Vayehi Hashem es Yoshua. Hashem was with Yoshua. Vayehi Shamo b'chal aretz. And his name was heard throughout the land. In other words, his fame was spread through the land. That's a very positive pasuk. But in the same little parsha, we begin Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, and it says, Vayimalu b'nei Yisroel ma'al b'cherim. The Jewish people were moel. Now, I don't know what the English word will say, desecrated, but they, remember, Yeshua said nobody could take from the spoils of Jericho. And it says, and the Jewish people sinned, a sin of desecration against that which Yeshua consecrated. Vayikach Ochan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach lemata Yehuda min acherim. And Ochan, the son of Karmi, the grandson of Zavdi, the great-grandson of Zerach, the great-great-great-great-grandson of Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda, he took from the cherim, he took from the consecrated spoils of Jericho. Vayichar af Hashem bivnei Yisrael. And Hashem was very angry at the Jewish people. Now, in our booklet from the Sefer Parshios B'Sifrei HaNeviim, he makes a note of that. And if you have, I still think we have pages for that. If you look in Pasuk, page Nun Gimel, should have that, right? Do we have Nun Gimel? Yeah? I don't know how many more pages we have, but page Nun Gimel in the middle, he makes an interesting notation of this. After, in the bold, after giving you the two psukim in the bold, he writes, in the small print now, right in the middle of the page, Nun Gimel, HaMesora Chibro Shnei Psukim Eila B'Parshik Tzarachas, the Mesora, the tradition, has combined, has authored these two psukim into one little parsha. L'chora would appear, HaPasuk Arishon, the first pasuk, Husikim L'chol Anisim, Shal Mabra Sayarim Shal Kibash Yericho. This pasuk is a summary and a conclusion of all the miracles that Hashem did when they split the Jordan, everything that happened that day, and the conquest of Jericho. And be'ikvoseim, and in the wake of those actions, havinu kol Yisrael v'kol Yoshua, it's everybody, the Jews and the non-Jews, they understood Shashem hu am Yeshua, Hashem is with Yeshua. Ulumaso, on the other hand, as a counterpoint, ha'pasuk ha'sheni, the second pasuk, hu psicha l'parsha ha'tragis, the second pasuk is an introduction to the tragic parsha and the painful parsha of the stumbling that we had in the city of Ai, which was the next battle, and the desecration that Ochan created and his punishment. Now, Mahaisa Kavonis Chazal Balei Masera Bechibram Yachadus Absumela. What was the intention of the rabbis when they combined these two parshas into one thing? It would have made a lot of sense that the last pasuk should be at the end of the last parsha, and the first pasuk starts a new parsha. Why were these two isolated as its own parsha? That's what he's asking. What was their intent? So in a small print, Amar Rav Levi, the smallest print, Amar Rav Levi, Vitema Rav Yonason, Rav Levi said, and some say it's Rav Yonason, Dover Zem Miseris B'Yodena, we have a tradition in our hands. Me'an Sheik Nesek Gol, the men of the Great Assembly taught us this lesson. Kamokam Shenemer Vayehi, whenever it says Vayehi, as it says it in Pasuk Aleph, rather in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, the first of these two small psukim, Vayehi, Hashem is Yeshua, and then again, Vayehi, Shema'o B'chal Aretz, it says, Vayehi Einu Ela Lashon Tsar. That's an expression of tsar, of pain. As it says, after Vayehi, the next pasuk says, Vayimalu B'nei Yisrael Mal B'chir. The Jewish people sinned by taking from the booty. So what is he saying from this? Parshas Mavo K'tzorazu Machnis Osonu L'Avonas Rucho Shel Achas HaParshos HaChamura Shebesifreinu. This little parsha, these little two psukim, is a brief but introductory parsha to an understanding of the entire aura of one of the most difficult parshios in the book of Sefer Yoshua. This next story we're going to learn, what Achan did, why he did what he did. There's so many questions, such a difficult understanding and why certain people died. It needs a little bit of an introduction, and that's what these two psukim serve for us as an introduction. Yeshua, as he explains, Yeshua v'itok al beis Yisrael, Yeshua and with him, the house of Israel, nimtzoyim bepiskas atzlocha. They find themselves at the apex of success. Shmo shel Yeshua higia l'ksos haaretz. Fame of Yeshua spreading to every corner of the land. Ki Hashem, he told that Hashem is with him. Ve'im yishayamu kenegu, no one's going to stand against him. It's like victory is now assured for the rest of the land. Kibush haaretz kula nira be'enei kol kemahalach pashut. The conquest of the rest of the land, in everybody's eyes, looks like a very straightforward path. Let's just go ahead and win. Without any complications and without any noteworthy opposition. Nothing couldn't really be called opposition. But on the other hand, and we see, that when you have a very small, weak city of Ai, it's a peanut compared to Yericho. You know, it's Lahavdil, you know what they're talking about now with the Patriots, New England Patriots, like they're trying to go with a perfect season, right? So they were mowing down teams, and then the last week, you know, they almost lose to one of the worst teams. You know, it's like, how's that happen? They beat all these great teams, and there's nothing team until the last second they're almost going to lose. So it's like the same thing. It's like, you know, they got an undefeated record, the Jewish people. They beat the most important cities. And now they come to this nothing of a peanut country eye. And what happens? May easy mochan, they have the chutzpah to fight. Even though the spies will see, there were spies who were sent to check out Yericho, and they said, there's nothing there. They got no hope. Etzem, next page. Let's do two more lines. Etzem, of uvdas amidasam kineged lochmi Yisrael, kvar ha'yisihol atmiyad, the essential goal of this little country to fight the Jews, you know, that's enough for us to wonder. What we know about all the other nations, we're very much afraid of the Jewish people. But of a low dive, that's not enough that the chutz will go out. But not only that, but the city of Ai is successful in their opposition, and they give the Jew a very difficult blow. How is that possible for that to happen? We're not talking about a football team now. We're talking about God's team. And when God's behind you, you're undefeated. You don't get defeated. So how this can happen? And all the, in the wake of that, we will discuss that in Mitzvah Shem tomorrow.